Hello, and welcome to episode 11 of the Arcade Repair Tips Question and Answer Podcast. My name is Jonathan Leung, the producer, director, and editor of the Arcade Repair Tips video series. And joining me today, as always, is Mr. Arcade Repair Tips himself, Tim Peterson. Tim, how are you doing today?
Doing great, Jonathan. Got the old shorts out of the closet and put them on. Kind of warm in Texas today.
Yeah, it is. It's getting pretty hot. But, you know, as much as I'm excited to have you with us today, Tim, like we always do, I'm more excited to have our special guest with us today, Stan the Man Bell, as I like to call him. And he's going to be joining us today and answering some questions, too. Stan, how are you doing today?
I'm doing all right. Thanks a lot. Thanks for coming over.
I forgot to mention that. We are in Stan's garage recording episode 11 of the podcast today, and he's got quite a few classics in here. You might hear some track noise as we record this podcast today. So, Stan, how many games do you have in your game room here?
I have 22 arcade games and a pinball, Black Knight pinball machine, and a Kramer Crane, all from 1985 to 1978.
Yeah, so look at that. All classics here in Stan's game room. And so it's just a great place. You know, it's kind of dark. We got some music videos playing over on the side. And it's just a really great atmosphere for recording the podcast. What do you think, Tim?
Yeah, I'm sitting here looking at Tempest, Track and Field, Joust, Centipede, Space Invaders, Berserk, Frogger, Stargate, the Black Knight Pinball, all just right here in this area, so I'm very much feeling nostalgic today.
That's right. It's just like being in an old school arcade, you know, and I think that was Stan's whole point behind putting together his arcade like this, right, Stan?
Yep. Put it together right here at the house, and because my wife wanted me to be around, and she couldn't see me, so I put a glass door between the kitchen and the garage, now arcade, and so I can see her and still play the games and have a place to unwind.
Yeah, and it's really great to be hanging out here with Stan today. We've been wanting to get Stan on the podcast for a while, but this is the first opportunity we've had, and we're glad to have him here today with us. So, but without further ado, we'll go ahead and get started into our progress updates from last show. So let's go ahead and start with Michael. Now, you guys might remember that Michael has been having some JAMA extender issues. He had a JAMA extender where it seemed like it would never work for him. He ordered it, I think, from JAMAboards.com. Isn't that right, Tim?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, and you know, he's been having a lot of trouble, and I think Tim offered last time that if he had just sent it to us, we'd take a look at it. And Michael wrote us back saying, "Hey, guys, thank you so much. I would like to take up your offer to repair my JAMA extender." So it looks like we're going to be taking a look at that for Michael, just to make sure, you know, there isn't anything wild going on. I remember he said that if he plugs it directly into the JAMA harness, he's fine, but when he uses the extender, it gives him some issues. So we definitely think that there's some problems in that extender there, Michael. So, you know, go ahead. We'll email you the information. You can send it on to us, and we'll take a look at it. Next, we had Aaron, and Aaron had a Neo Geo cabinet with a dead Wells Garner 7000 monitor, and he wrote us back saying, "Thanks for answering my question about the Neo Geo monitor during episode 10. You guys are awesome and do great work. I listen and get something out of every episode. When you read my question, you asked if I replaced the HOT. I did buy a complete repair kit from Bob Roberts and replaced the 2SD1398, which is what I understand to be the HOT. I also put a new fuse and it tests good. I double-checked all the caps for positive and negative, and it all seems to be correct, and solder seems to be good. Anyways, keep up the good work. Again, thanks again for the help, Aaron." So, Tim, we've got some issues here. It sounds like he did replace the HOT. We asked him last time if he did. He did. It looks like he's checked some caps. Tim, is there anywhere he can go from here if his monitor's still not working?
Well, he doesn't say that he didn't put it in or that it's not working yet. So, Aaron, that's one question I'd have is, have you tried it? If it's not, then, you know, you're probably looking at a bad flyback. And I would definitely, guys, we talked about the flyback kit. Stan, I don't know if you know, for $26, I think it is right now, Bob Roberts is offering the flyback, the fuse, the HOT, and a cap kit for your monitor. So almost at that price, it's almost, whether you need it or not, it's almost good to get some of those kits while they're still available.
Yeah, that is a great price.
Yeah, and I think Aaron, that's what sounds like Aaron picked up here. He's got that complete repair kit. But I think he might have said last time he replaced the flyback. And I remember him also saying that he had checked some of the diodes like we showed in one of our videos, Tim. But, it's so hard to troubleshoot from this point if he's replaced all that stuff. You know, I mean, could it be his tube at this point? Could he have some issues with the tube maybe?
You know, we never want to rule that out. Although, we always tell guys, 9 out of 10 times your tubes don't go bad that often. But they do. So, and you probably could be one of those lucky guys like me. I'm always the 1 out of 10 guy. But, you know, by all means, if you've replaced the flyback, the HOT, the fuse, the caps, and those check those diodes in that area, there's not much else that it can be unless you got some bad traces or something. You know, you might want to look at that, or just a bad solder connection somewhere. Stan, you got something to add to that?
Yeah, if you have a another game with the Wells Garner 7000 in it, then you can use that to your advantage and take that chassis out and put it on another tube, where on another Wells Garner 7000, that is, and test it to try to troubleshoot to see if it is your tube. I'm with Tim, though, that it's very unlikely that tubes go out. They'll start to get funky, but go out completely unless you break the neck bore or the neck, then you're probably safe.
Sure. And, you know, that's probably a good thing. I'm just bringing up the tube at this point because it sounds like he's done so much to repair the chassis at this point that it almost seems like we're at that point. But Tim, you know, Tim and Stan both bring up good points. You know, try that in another game, maybe that you have a Wells Garner 7000 in if you've got one. Or also, you know, check for some bad traces on the chassis to see if you might find any as well. So, okay, Tyree is the next one, and he writes us back. I think he had some problems with his Street Fighter 2. It was like shorting out every so often. The color red would go out. And he writes us back saying, thanks a lot. You guys were very helpful, and I appreciate you giving me time on the podcast. Well, you are all correct. I found that it was happening in the connection between the RGB connector and the chassis. I can tell because when I touch that area or pull the wires tight, the colors come in perfectly again. I haven't determined if it's a loose connection within the red wire and its housing or the solder joint between the chassis and the male connector. I still have to check that out. I still have an issue where the character sprites do weird flashing, but I'll see if I can investigate that more and get some more info to you for a more specific question. Thanks again. So it's always good to hear when somebody fixes something or at least tracks it down. You know, Tyree, we've seen that a million times where a game will lose a color or drop a color, and it's almost always in that connector between the board and the monitor. Tim, do you have anything to add to this for Tyree here?
Yeah, you know, reflowing the solder on the back of there is real quick and simple, and I would definitely do that first. But if you need help with that connector, those are 0.156 Molex pins. They're not that hard to replace. I assume it is, being that it's a Street Fighter and all that era used those pins a lot. So I would definitely try to reflow the solder first, just because it takes a little bit of time, a little bit more knowledge maybe to pop that pin out, reconnect it. But it's not hard, and it's pretty easy to do.
Yeah, and I think that's good. Now, Stan, do you have anything that you want to add to Tyree?
Yeah, when we talk about reflowing the solder, don't forget about the neck board, especially if it's a whole color like the red, because on the neck board you have your red cutout and other controls there that if you get a cold solder break, it'll knock the whole color out as well.
Sure.
So be sure to reflow the solder on those potentiometers on the neck board.
That's a great recommendation, Stan. You know, we've seen color issues in that area as well. So, you know, Tyree, you might also check around there if you're having a little bit of issue. You know, if you're going to reflow solder anyway, reflow solder, you know, in those several places, and you should get it back. Now, as far as your sprites go, we've seen sprite issues with Street Fighter 2s all the time. A lot of times this is a board-level issue when you have these sprite issues. I have a couple of Street Fighter 2 boards where you don't see the characters at all. You only see the backgrounds. And it's just because, you know, those ROM chips, every time they had to load, they loaded up those characters every time. And eventually they just get to the point where it's, you know, they give up. You know, and, it, you know, so I've seen that a couple of times on different Street Fighter 2 boards. But it just sounds like this is what's happening with yours. You might try, you know, I know it has that second tier board. You might try pushing that down a little bit to see if it fixes the problem. But overall, you know, you might start looking into another Street Fighter 2 board and see if, you know, if that works, or another JMO board, and, you know, just plug it in to see if it works as well.
One thing that you might try on the sprite issues is taking, if there's any integrated circuit chips, is you can take those off. Those legs will oxidize. You take a small wire brush, real lightly though, and pull that pin out if it's not integrated on, and clean those legs, and it will a lot of times clear up your sprite issues.
Sure, and that's another thing to try, Tyree. You know, try it on your Street Fighter 2 board and see if that doesn't fix it, you know, especially before investing in a new board. Not that boards are expensive, but it's always good to get one working. So, well, that about does it for the questions, you know, from the last previous shows that we've had. So we'll go ahead and move on to our website questions, and the first one is a voicemail from Kenny about the 8-liners chassis. So we'll take a moment and listen to Kenny's question.
Hello, this is Kenny Hardy, and I'm calling about a question about 8-liners monitor chassis kit, and I want to know if you guys ever bought one and repaired a TV, or changed out a TV, tube swapped, or if you recommend going through 8-liner. Just give me a call back as soon as you can. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Okay, so Tim, we've got Kenny here, and it sounds like he's trying to use the 8-liners chassis that we've recommended in the past. He asked us if we've ever bought one. Tim, have you ever used one of the 8-liners chassis before?
Personally, I never have, but the reason I know about it is because where I work, I know another tech that did that, couldn't find a chassis, and basically they made him a chassis. You know, the 8liners.com will do that for you. You read on the yoke and a few things that he wants you to do. He'll make you a chassis. Some of those rare tubes and different things are different kinds. So, but I have, like I said, I haven't, but I do know of several people that have, and with pretty decent luck. You know, just like any chassis, there you get a brand new chassis out of the deal. It's a pretty good price.
Yeah. Now, he asked us also if we've ever used one on a television tube before, but I would imagine that this is no different than using a television tube with a regular chassis, right?
No. In fact, cost-wise, if he's going to build you a chassis, you can get a TV tube basically for free, and then that's what you could use. Yeah, it doesn't matter what he builds. It would actually probably get, no burn, that kind of stuff. If you were going to have a chassis made, I would recommend using a TV tube because it's going to look so good compared to maybe an old arcade tube.
Sure, yeah. No screen burn usually on television tubes, Now, what about you, Stan? Have you ever used an 8-liner's chassis before?
I haven't. The only one thing I would say is on the television tube is that it could be made in any way because they're all phosphorus base, and so something new that's going to have a thicker coating would last longer.
Yeah, sure. And so, we encourage people, if you're going to, why not use a television tube, especially if you're going to get an 8-liner's chassis made for it, and it sounds like it might be a really good idea. So, Kenny, hopefully you can check that out, try that out, and let us know how it goes with your 8-liner's chassis. So, okay, let's move on to Kelso. I guess that's how you say that, Kelso. And he writes, "Hey guys, first of all, let me say great website and tutorials for beginners and experts alike. I've been spending hours looking through your videos and reading material on your site. I just bought a Street Fighter II cabinet from someone, but the CRT only displays a yellow horizontal line across the monitor. I know it may be the resistors, IC, or blown fuse, but I'm an amateur at soldering. I popped out the chassis thanks to your tutorial, but I'm not confident enough to solder and desolder on my own without messing something up." He also gives us his address where we can eat, where he's located and everything. I won't read that on the show here, but he wants to send it in to us. And he also gives us a question about, would you know how to change the locks on a coin cab? The guy that I got it from lost the key, and he said the player 2 slot isn't working. Please let me know what I can do. Thanks again, and I hope to hear from you soon. So, Stan, I'm actually going to throw this one to you first. He's got the horizontal collapse. We've seen this before. What do you think this is in Kelso's case here?
Horizontal collapse usually is classically is a high output transistor, otherwise known as a HOT. HOT we'll see a lot of times. It's just a high output transistor, and they're usually mounted on the sides of the monitor cage. They look like a stack of nickels, and they sometimes rub up against the cabinet and they short out, and it'll collapse you either vertically or horizontally. So most likely, since you've just got a half collapse, it's going to be a high output transistor.
Sure. Now, Tim, do you have anything to add to what Stan said about this?
Yeah, well, he asked if, of course, well, first thing he's asking us if he could send it to us for repair. And guys know that we charge generally about $70 approximately, including shipping back to you. So if he wants to send it in, we can get him that information. But yeah, the IC chip will go bad. Could be a cap in that one cap in that area. More than likely, though, he's got to replace that, or we can do it for him. If he doesn't feel comfortable, we always tell everybody, this is a lot of stuff, we show you videos, but if ever, any time you don't feel comfortable, it's better off that you send it in until you get that experience. Now, how do you get that experience? Buy you a old circuit board off of eBay or something. Learn how to solder. Practice. Practice, practice, practice. You have to do this. If you don't feel comfortable, take an old DVD player apart and get unsolder and solder the chip back on.
Yeah, go to the junkyard, pick you up an old electronic that's sitting there, and then just go to town, right?
Yeah, I mean, you have to practice. So, by all means, if you don't, you're more than welcome to send it to us. Average cost on that repair is about $70.
Yeah. So, Stan, did you have anything that you wanted to add real quick? I noticed you're kind of
Yes.
Give me the look here. So.
I was going to say about practicing. And on your soldering, is get a fine tip soldering. You don't have to buy an expensive soldering gun to practice on, but you can get one from your local electronics store for $5, $10 and change the tip to a fine tip so that you can flow a good solder and keep some water around and wet your tip with a sponge. And that will help keep the oxidation off the tip to allow your skills to develop, and then you'll be soldering real finite things.
Yeah, and I think that's a good idea. You know, guys, you know, it just comes down to practice. You know, I mean, me, Stan, and Tim, we have all done a lot of soldering in our time, but the only way we got good was just practicing it. You know, I mean, with my dad, I would solder stuff with him. We'd solder wires together and stuff when I was a kid, and that's how I learned most of what I learned. But it all came from practice. None of it came just naturally. I didn't pick up the soldering iron and said, I am a master solderer now. I can solder anything together. Well, maybe I did, but I was a kid, so you know how that went. But overall, you know, just practice it. Now, I will throw another thing he asked about the coins, you know, changing out the locks on a cabinet. You know, there's a video that we have that you can look at that has, you know, we actually drill out a lock in an arcade cabinet, and then we replace it with another one. Now, Stan here is actually a certified locksmith, so if you're like Stan, you can just open it up, and it's no problem. Right, Stan?
Right, and you want to start opening with the one on the back, because then you run less of a chance of scratching or the lock or messing the lock up, and then reaching through, if you can, and popping the front lock back hatch off.
Right, and I think actually in the video where we drill out the lock, I think we even mentioned Stan. If you have a friend who's a locksmith, you know,
yeah.
And I think that's referring to Stan when we say that, you know, that.
But you're hearing what Stan's saying. If you take the back door lock off, or you know, if you're not getting too pretty with it, at least it's the back of the game. A lot of times you can reach up then with a you know with your brown nut driver or whatever and take that lock off without doing any damage to the front lock. And then it's a 7/8 wrench socket to take that nut off. And you can buy them at Lowe's, Home Depot, maybe even Walmart for a cabinet lock. But at the same time, we highly recommend that Bob Roberts sells those things real cheap. And they're good locks for what you get. And I would highly recommend going to his site and getting those locks from him.
Sure. Well, hopefully that answers all of Kelso's questions. So we'll go ahead and move on to Andrew. Now, Andrew says, hello, I recently found your site and tutorials on YouTube, so forgive me if this question has already been asked, but I'm wondering if you can answer a few questions about the assembly of most arcade cabinets. I bought a large cabinet at an auction that is too large to fit in my house. Judging from the underside of the control panel, it was once a four-player cabinet. It has a sticker on the back with model soccer and a serial number with Street Fighter III in it, so it's probably from the mid-90s. What I'm wondering is, are cabinets constructed by screwing into the sides of the cabinet from the outside and later filling in the holes or laminating the sides? Or are they screwed together from the supports on the insides? I ask because I'm hoping to fully disassemble this cabinet so I can reassemble it later. If it is assembled from the inside out, I should be able to avoid major resurfacing work to the side panel's exterior. I would really appreciate your experience on this, and your tutorials are great. Thank you for the time you've invested on them. So Andrew here is asking, basically, how are arcade cabinets put together typically? Tim, you did write them back, and I do have the response here if you want to go over that response for us.
Yeah, it's kind of funny. He sent us some pictures because he wants to take this cabinet upstairs. Basically, what he said is he's going to have to disassemble the cabinet and reassemble it up there. And that's a chore, but...
the old ship in the bottle technique, right?
Yeah, and I guess he's going to sell the house. He'll probably end up, if he ever does, when he does this, is just leave it up there. But one thing I noticed, it had a huge control panel. And most of the time, if you take the control panel off, the rest of the cabinet will move up, kind of like moving a refrigerator now. It's not easy going upstairs and turning it and stuff, but it's possible. And I noticed that he did actually get it apart and do this. I don't know if we have the update from him, but anyway, cabinets are, you know, they're made to stay together. Yeah, they're not made to come apart, and that's not an easy task. And I would call this an extreme last resort. I know you guys will probably agree with that. It's possible, but the way they make those cabinets, they are not made to come apart on the outside. You don't see screw heads. They're glued. They're stapled together. Guys, you know, we've come across some busted cabinets before. Even trying to bust them off with a sledgehammer or something is pretty hard to do.
Yeah,
and, Stan,
definitely.
I know you've probably seen that before. just your experience, arcade cabinets are not made to take apart.
They are not, and actually they will bear a lot of weight. We've had a friend showed us some pictures of a Moon Patrol holding an entire building up after a storm. So they won't come apart very easily. And when we say staple, we're not talking about just like your regular staple gun. These are air-compressed Brad staple guns with a lot of force that will go through a lot of wood. And then the glue they use is part Gorilla Glue, I think.
Yeah. Now, and I will mention this, that we put some arcade games in some pretty crazy places. I know Tim and Jerry one time put one through a window to get into a guy's house.
It was easier to go through his bedroom window than it was to take it down the hall. So that was a... That was a blitz.
Yeah, NFL blitz. So,
but by all means, first thing that you can do, I haven't seen hardly any cabinets that are that wide without the control panel, though.
That's true.
One thing you can try to do is try to figure out how the control panel is on there. If you get that off, a lot of times you can get the rest of the cabinet up there.
And I'd like to chime in on that. As a matter of fact, most of the larger four-player games with those extended control panels will be bolted on with lag bolts. But they won't be visible to the eye. You'll have to get up under there from the back or through the coin door and look for those lag bolts, and then you'll be able to pull that whole control panel off usually.
Yeah, and that will make the game much thinner, allow you to maneuver it through places that you couldn't maneuver it with that control panel on. That's great advice from both Stan and Tim on this. And you know, hopefully that does, you know, that that answers his question here. You know, I think Andrew hopefully, you know, can get that game through without having to disassemble the entire cabinet. And hopefully, just get the control panel off and maneuver to where he needs it. So, okay, let's move on to Dan. Now, Dan says, "Hey guys, I just picked up a Mortal Kombat cabinet with a 25-inch Hunter X MTC 9000 monitor. The monitor works, but the sides of the image are sort of bowed in like an hourglass shape. It's most noticeable on screens with straight lines on either side. I've played around with some of the knobs to no avail. Horizontal amp and horizontal phase don't seem to quite do what I need. Any ideas? If you've already covered this in a podcast, please point me in the right direction." Well, we actually have not covered this on a podcast, and I think I'm going to go to Stan on this one first, because Stan has some experience with this. Stan, what do you think about the little bowed hourglass shape? What's causing that on his chassis?
Well, dimes for dollars, it is going to be bad capacitors. If it's not going to be any of your high-output transistors or resistors or anything like that, because when they go, they'll just collapse or stop working altogether.
Sure.
What it is it's going to be in your horizontal or vertical area, depending on where the bows are at, or hula, as sometimes they're referred to, and those caps won't be holding in tolerance to what they're supposed to be as charge goes. And when that happens, they'll start to pincushion in or bow in.
Sure. And I'm with you, Stan. I think this is definitely something with a capacitor. Tim, do you have anything else to chime in here on Dan's question?
No, but if he does some research, a lot of people do call that the hula effect. And sometimes that particular chassis, I can't recall offhand where it would be. But, you know, you're going to have your horizontal width coil if it is a horizontal issue, which horizontal and vertical a lot of times are easy to get mixed up. If you're talking about the sides, you're probably talking about the horizontal. If you're talking about the up and down, what a lot of people would say vertical, you know, is like that. But so what you can do is look for those pots that affect that and look for those caps in that area.
Sure.
I would recommend that just take if you can get the board out and visually inspect each of the caps and look for popcorn tops, you know, kind of they have an X on the top, and if they're kind of jiffy popped on the top, if they're kind of bowed up a little bit, then you know that that's a bad one. If they got any black crud around the bottom, or if they're any kind of stuff that are any of that electrolytic goo from the inside is coming out, then you may have just one capacitor. A lot of times it's just one capacitor, but you just go in there and change them all at the same time.
Sure. And we've talked in the past about ESR meters. If you wanted to use one of those here, he could, to check some of the caps and everything. But a visual inspection, a lot of times, you can catch a lot of those bad caps without even having to hook it up. So, Dan, hopefully that answers your question. Now we're going to move on to Seth. Now, Seth has been writing us several emails over the last, you know, a week or so. He got his first arcade cabinet, the Donkey Kong. And it's always exciting. It's exciting when somebody gets their first arcade cabinet. And so we've heard a lot of emails from Seth. But let me go ahead and... and get into some of his questions here. His first email to us was, "Hi, I just bought my first arcade machine. It's an original Donkey Kong, and I'm trying to change out the control panel artwork. Plexiglass. How do I remove the joysticks to get the plexiglass off? I love your podcast, and will send you a picture of the whole process of me restoring my Donkey Kong once it is done." So before we move into the other two emails from Seth, let's talk about removing joysticks from a control panel. How do we remove a joystick from a control panel, Tim?
Well, you know, that's what I thought when I – but now that I'm reading his question, I think what he's asking is how do you move the control panel to get the plexiglass off?
Yeah, you see, I'm wondering both because you also have to remove the joysticks as well. It is a full process.
Yeah.
He could be talking about both, though. Maybe he doesn't
know. Or he's talking about the plexiglass – on the control panel.
Right. If I might, okay. He may be talking at what's in between. He wants to, you can't take the plexiglass off without taking the joystick shaft off.
That's right.
The joystick can stay, you don't have to take the entire joystick off, just the joystick shaft. On the back of the joystick shaft on the bottom side, you go up underneath there through the coin door and there's two latches on the edges. You unlatch those, the joystick panel will come up, you flip it over, there's a C-clip on the back of the joystick shaft. You slide that sleek clip off. Be very careful to mark how everything goes in because that particular joystick on a Donkey Kong can be tricky to put back together. Slide that joystick shaft off the bolts that hold the plexi on the four corners. You slide that plexi off, and then it will slide up and off.
Right, and that will allow you access to that plexiglass that he's talking about. I think that's what he's really talking about, Tim.
Yeah, what he's... I kind of reading that now. What Stan is saying, too, is you don't have to take the whole back or the square part off.
Right.
You just got to pull the knob and the shaft off, and that allows you enough room to get this control panel off, the plexi off.
So that should answer Seth's first one. Now let's get to Seth's second email here, and he says, "Hey, guys, it's Seth again. I'm working hard to get my Donkey Kong machine in top-notch condition. This is the first time I've ever done anything like this. I have it almost all done, but I've noticed that my monitor's looking strange on the intro. The words Donkey Kong look like the blue is bleeding. I noticed it very slightly in the other stages. Should I get a cap kit? The problem I'm having is that a cap kit is $10 and another $100 to $150 to install it. At this point, I can't solder that good and I don't want to take a chance. I've called about four repair shops and they've all say between $100 and $150 for installation. At that price, I should just replace the monitor with a new one. I want something that will last. If I should replace the monitor, where should I buy one? I looked at arcadeshop.com, and I do have to get an adapter. Please, any help would be great. You guys are the best, and I can't say thanks enough." So Seth, his second one is that he's noticing bleeding on his Donkey Kong. Now, he jumps immediately to cap kit, and I'm not so sure if that's the right jump to make. Stan, what do you think? If you got bleeding colors, do you jump directly to cap kit, or do you try some adjustments first?
You definitely want to try your adjustments first, especially at blue. On the back of your neck board, on that Nintendo monitor, there's going to be five potentiometers. And that's going to control your bleeding, your drive, your cutout for your red, green, and blue colors. And it could be just needs an adjustment there. I would hold off on sending it to somebody else for repair and make those adjustments first. Visually inspect your caps. One thing you want to, replacing that monitor, the sound goes through that monitor for the Donkey Kong. And might I say, Donkey Kong is a great game to have too. So congratulations on a real classic there.
Yeah. I guess he's joining the King of Kong people. You know, we've all got our Donkey Kongs. Now, Tim, I mean, you know, he's kind of in this weird position where he knows what's wrong with the game, but he doesn't have the experience to fix it. I mean, that's kind of an odd position to be in. What do you think about being in that position? I mean, is this something where you would just say, "Hey, I'm going to practice, and then I'll try to install it," or is this something where you feel like, "I really just don't have the experience, and I just need to send it off"?
Okay. Well, he says that. It kind of boils down to a money issue, okay? And I say this, why not try to fix it? Why not practice on some solder?
Reach on, brother.
Why not go ahead and try it? Because if you do end up having to buy another monitor, which may be his choice, you don't have much to lose.
That's true.
Some valuable lessons. And sometimes the experience alone will pay for that. So I want to recommend, Seth, that you look at our videos. Now, granted, we'll all agree, a Donkey Kong or a Sanyo monitor is not the easiest guy to get out and repair.
Very true.
If you can do that one, you're really stepping up your level a notch. But you know what? I would get the cap kit and try it yourself. But if you can't, and you do want to get another monitor. Now, here's the second. We got a couple parts to this question. Second part is he asked where to get one. And I'm going to tell you something, two words, good luck. They do not make two monitors anymore. The best place to get one would be to go through a somebody that does 8-liners and stuff, because those are RGB. And from what I understand, what they did a lot in the late 90s, mid-90s, was these games were on route, and they were making just lots of money.
Bukus of money. Yeah, I think I saw a stat the other day, just real quick, that like a Pac-Man in the 80s was bringing in something like $5,000 a week.
Right.
I mean, that's amazing.
But an 8-liner could bring that in sometimes a lot, too. And what they did was they started stockpiling monitors because they were buying them cheap. And what they did was they said, you know, if the game goes down, you can put a monitor in pretty fast rather than repair the chassis. So they were popping these monitors in and keeping that game, keeping those people sitting there playing those 8-liners. So I know a guy, in fact, that probably has two pallets of them. And we'd be glad to pass that info along. But at the same time, because you're just not going to find very many tube TVs. Wells Garner doesn't sell them anymore. Have Controls doesn't sell them anymore. eBay might be one of your next best options.
And what a better, I'd like to chime in what Tim said, what a better opportunity than to, you don't have much to lose, is to solder these yourself. A cap kit can be a little bit, the first time, a little bit daunting of a task, but it's not high-tech or microfine soldering that you have to do for a capacitor. You got to make sure that you get the positive leg and the positive hole, and if you get a desoldering bulb or desoldering braid and a soldering iron, you could do this.
Now, you know, he does bring up the point that Arcade Shop does have them in stock, and they do. They have a Cortec and they have a Hapvision Pro, both of them for $200.
Okay, and if they're still selling them for that, I'll just tell you this much. I would avoid the Cortec monitor. It's made in Korea, and unless you read Korean good, it's not real hard or easy to read the schematics and things. So I don't like Cortec. That's my opinion.
I think we covered that pretty thoroughly last podcast, actually, Tim.
Oh, really?
We were talking about Cortec.
Yeah. I got a few terms for that monitor, but we won't go into them today. Keeps it family related.
That's right. I'm the adult tech.
But yes, he will need the adapter to run it in there, and that's not always easy to do, to hook up all that stuff. So. Bottom line, try to repair yours, and then let's use the last extreme, going to another monitor. $100 to $150, though, sounds a little high to get it repaired. If you could pull that chassis, most of us will repair chassis for cheaper than that do arcade repair.
Yeah, and, you know, that kind of gets to the heart of his next question, so I'll go ahead and read it real quick, Tim. He says, "Hey, guys, hope you're not sick of me. I watch your videos and feel I can remove the chassis if you feel it's a cap problem and mail it to you guys if you do cap kit repairs. Please let me know if this is an option. I just want to be able to play Donkey Kong. On the second level, with all the blue, it makes it hard to see because it bleeds like it does on the opening screen in the picture I sent. Thank you so much for your help." Now, Tim, he's talking here again, you know, about sending it to us for cap kits. Now, we do cap kits, right?
Yes, and he can send that to us, and it'll be cheaper than $100.
Yeah, cheaper than $100?
Yeah,
so we'll do it for
less than probably around that $70 range.
Okay, well, I mean, that's good information. So, yeah, if you want to send to us, if you do not feel comfortable with it, you know, we're more than happy to give you an email address you can send on that chassis. But, you know, like we said, try some of the adjustments first before you get onto that. So, okay, so let's move on now to Steve's question. S-T-E, I guess that's how you say that. And Steve writes us saying, "Hey, guys, just discovered your website. Excellent info you have here. Anyway, I've got a switching power supply for arcade use, but it's +24, ground, floor ground, ACL, ACN. My question is, how do I wire up this power supply since there's no 12 or 5 volts? Thanks, guys." So, Tim, we got a guy here. He's got a power supply, but it's got 24 volts instead of the standard 12 or 5. What's going on?
Well, he's got one used for arcade games, but it may not be specifically for his arcade games. In fact, I hardly ever see one that doesn't have also the 12 and the 5 in it. Game that comes into mind is Johnny Nero.
Sure.
In other words, you need the 5 and the 12 just to play the game. The only thing, the 24 volts, is run the knockers for the guns.
Right.
So, basically, you either, you don't have the right power supply, is what I'm trying to say. You also either need the 12 and the 5 typical power supply, like you get at BobRoberts.net, or What we need to know is what game is this going into?
Yeah. And
some of the newer games now, we have like at Chuck E. Cheese, you have like the Raging Ape, the 24 volts, again, controls the shaker motor. But, yeah, I hardly ever see a game where 24 volts is running your motherboard.
Yeah, unless it's like a pinball machine or something like that. I guess, and even though, even
yeah,
then.
Yeah, even
you know.
Then, I don't, you just, your 5 and your 12s are so common. But it might help if he lets us know what game it is. There could be, it could need to be in there, and then we can help him wire it if possible. But more than likely, he's just going to have to get the standard 15 amp, you know, 5 and 12 volt, negative 5 power supply like we use all the time.
Sure. Now, Stan, have you ever seen an arcade game that used the 24 volts, I mean, in your experience?
No. As a matter of fact, nothing that high. And I was just sitting here thinking about it, that 224s, even if it has an adjustment on it to where you could adjust one down, if it doesn't have dual adjustments, it's not going to be able to adjust those 24s down to the 12 and 5. And so it's, I'm with Tim. It's probably either not the right power supply for that game, or it's just a out there game.
Yeah. So, I mean, Steve, you probably need to give us a little bit more detail, let us know what game it is, and maybe we can also get the pinouts for that game and take a look. Maybe it does use 24. I mean, just because we haven't seen it does not mean it doesn't.
True.
So.
But the way he read was, how does he get it to 12? Well, yeah, you can. It's possible you can run resistors and drag, but let's just get the right power supply for it. In fact, you know, we were just using one the other day. Came from HAP. Had the digital readout. They're not that expensive. Man, you don't even have to have a multimeter to tell if you're on track or not.
Yeah, and that's pretty cool when you see those like that. You know, I think Bob Roberts sells those as well, doesn't he, Tim?
Yeah, he did at one time.
And Arcade Shop. So
right.
If you guys
Arcade
want to look
Shop,
at those.
I'm pretty sure it does.
So, Steve, hopefully that answered your question. Give us a little bit more detail. Maybe we can help you out more. So. Okay, let's move to Jordan. Now, Jordan says, hi, I have an MVS Candy Cab with the above-mentioned TOEI chassis. For a while, I have been experiencing what I think is called foldover, where half the screen is black and the other half looks like it is folded over onto itself. I was trying to mess around with the monitor settings the other day, and I must have jumped something because now all I get is a single horizontal white line with a buzzing noise. I have noticed that most places don't sell cab kits for this chassis. So I was wondering if you could help me fix this monitor. So, Tim, let's go to you. What do you think Jordan's problem is? He sounds like he had this fold-over issue, and then it just went, you know, kaboom, all into one line. So what's up with that?
Yeah, it sounds like his vertical IC chip went out or one of the caps. But what you can do is, just because you don't have a cap kit, make your own cap kit. All you got to do is go around to the caps, write down that number that's on the side. You know, the UF stands for microfarads, and then it'll have a voltage on there. Write down, you got like a 2200 UF at 35 volts. Write those down, and then you can go to Mouser.com or Newark.com or DigiKey, and you can order just, or even Bob Roberts. You tell Bob Roberts, even Bob might even help him make a cap kit if he tells him the caps that he needs. Bob could kind of custom make him a cap kit. Maybe cost a little bit more. But that'd definitely be a place to start. Or, like we said, get the ESR meter and try to determine what cap is bad, because probably not very many of them. But if it's depending on which way it's folding, you know, we talked about this in some of our videos, what area it's in. And
right.
You don't have to replace all those caps in that area, not necessarily everything else, all the caps.
Sure. Now, Stan, do you have anything to chime in on Jordan's problem here?
Yeah, I was reading his question here, and I just, you know, I could just visually see his monitor dying, because that's what you witnessed, is you watched your monitor die, much like maybe a little bug or something that was once alive and not really flying straight and then dead.
Ran into a wall, and
that's what happened to your monitor, is because those are some classic symptoms that your monitor was going out. You saw the folding, you saw the line, then a white line, and then the ominous buzzing noise. That tells me right there that it's your chassis is toast. The tube itself is probably still good, but you've got some issues that's going to need some rebuild. So that white line says problems, and the buzzing noise says problems. Be sure not to, you know, shock yourself on it.
Sure, and that's good advice, you know. And like Tim said, you know, check the vertical section of your monitor. You know, I think, you know, Stan mentioned some stuff on another question about checking the hot and some of the other things. What you might want to do is get that rebuild kit from the realbobroberts.net, like we've recommended before. Comes with the hot, comes with the flyback and all that good stuff. And you know, just start out there with the flyback and the hot, and then kind of work your way around. And then, you know, refresh the solder around that vertical IC as well and see if that helps. So, you know, hopefully they answered your question, Jordan, and, you know, let's keep us updated on the progress. So, okay, let's move to Matt. Now, Matt says, hi, just like to say thanks for all of your informational videos. They are very helpful. I am based in the UK, and I have two faulty monitors. One does not even light up blue or power on, but when you turn the pots at the back, it makes different high-pitched sounds. The other one works, but the top 15% of the monitor is at an angle and not very clear. None of the pots make it any better. I have tried with several games, and it is definitely the monitor on both monitors. Any help would be great. Thanks. So let's take Matt's first monitor here. It says he's not getting any kind of light up on the monitor, but it's making some higher pitch sounds when he makes some pot adjustments. Tim, what's going on?
Yeah, well, he definitely could have a bad flyback going bad, or he's adjusting that B-plus voltage way too high. He needs to really watch his B-plus voltage if he's not sure where that is. Maybe you can look at Bob Roberts' site. It'll show arrows and stuff like that. He also talks about it being slanted. It sounds like it's out of sync. Also, he needs to adjust his holds, or it could be his wiring to these monitors. A lot of times, guys, just because one monitor is wired one way, you go and swap out a tube, that next monitor might require a different type of sync, and that would be the white wire coming from his harness. Most time it's white anyway. You know, we talked about before the red, green, blue, ground, and then it jumps over to the sync. So, you know, I'd be kind of wondering if he's got it wired up correct, too. He's hearing that squealing.
Sure. Now, what about you, Stan? What do you think? The high-pitched noise is obviously his monitor's not working. What's going on here?
Yeah, that high-pitched sound right there is a real indicator that you either got your B voltage turned up too high, which will kill other things, or your flyback is going out and it's squealing. And that's precursor to it going out or leaking. So, but I would look for, it could be the way that it's slanting at the top, it could be a single large cap. I replaced a large cap on a monitor the other day that had the same symptoms, and just at the top was flattened out, and it was making a noise. And I visually inspected the board, found a large cap, and when I'm talking, it was a 35 volt, which is an odd voltage for it, and a 22,000 UF, which is a pretty good sized cap when voltage wise, and so I replaced that one, and boom, it fixed it. But it took me a while to troubleshoot it.
Yeah,
and watch running that until you get it fixed, because if that cap explodes, and if your head is anywhere within 5 feet of that, you have a good earache for a while.
Yeah.
So it could be a cap. It's true.
Yeah, on that second monitor, I definitely agree. It could be probably a cap. We've seen it several times where we've had that off angle at the top, and it is usually a cap problem. So, Matt, hopefully that helps you out with both of your monitors there, and hopefully you can get them both up and running. So, let's go ahead and move on to Brent's question now. And Brent says, hello, I found your video series on YouTube. Great stuff. I have a weird specific question, a very weird specific question, Tim.
Yeah, that's about 90% of our questions sometimes.
That's right. I'm relatively new to arcade restoration. I'm still learning the details of wiring. I'm in the process of purchasing a Super Pac-Man cocktail that would eventually convert to a Ms. Pac-Man. From examining the boards, it appears that both of them have different hookups. I was wondering what would be the best or possible way of converting these games. I have thought of a couple of approaches, but I have no idea if they will work. And he lists them here for us. And he says, number one, replace the Super Pac wiring harness with and board with a Ms. Pac-Man wiring harness and board. And number two, gut it and replace it with all JAMA power supply wiring harness and get a JAMA converter for the Ms. Pac-Man board. I hope my questions and possible fixes make sense. Thanks. So Brett has a Super Pac-Man and a Ms. Pac-Man. He's saying that the wiring is different from what he's noticing. Now, he's given us two possibilities. Now, the first thing that we want to say is that we're not sure if the wiring is different. I mean, Stan was pretty sure, and I think Tim as well, and myself, that Super Pac and Ms. Pac are about the same, right, guys? I mean, we're about to test our memory here, but...
Yes, they're about the same. Definitely, one of your questions is the power supply will work on both, and absolutely. One of the things that you want to keep in mind on the Super Pac converting and Ms. Pac and converting it to JAMA is how original do you want it? Sometimes the classic is in the feel. I mean, you could port and play Ms. Pac-Man on your phone, but it doesn't give you the coin-operated game feel. And so if you want the real Ms. Pac-Man, is you keep it real, and you keep the original wiring harness, and you make it original. And that's just my personal take on it.
Yeah, and I mean, that's definitely one way to go about it. I think both ways that he brings up, though, will work, right, Tim?
Yes. It's a kind of a personal preference. It's kind of like we talked about the old Cadillac. and how we can go and rebuild that engine and everything. And as long as we're driving that around town and everything, we're pretty good. I don't know if I would drive to New York City in it. If I was going to take that old Cadillac, I might put a new engine in it and do so it's kind of a preference. If you do wire it JAMA and get like an adapter, that'll work. You can also keep that 5 volts adjusted, which is pretty tough to do with an old power supply. There's not an adjustment on it. You do get brand new wiring in that perspective, but then again, it's not going to be original. And if you can keep it original, I would check your voltages coming off of there and make sure that you are getting correct voltages before I'd ever try to plug another board in.
And something that's always important to remember is that if you do plan on going for any kind of record, that your game must be all original. You know, for Twin Galaxies rules, you must have an all original game, correct?
Correct.
That is correct. And so, it's about personal preference and about choice. I mean, what do you want out of the game is what you really have to ask yourself. Are you looking for something that's just fun to play? Or are you looking to recapture a feeling? Or is it just a game that you just want to have around for the kids? If it is, then go JAMA all the way, because it's going to be less daily interaction to keep it up and going. But you lose something when converting it, and that's just my personal feeling.
Sure. So, well, hopefully that answers your questions, Brent. If, you know, just keep us updated on what you decide to do, which way you decide to go. And, you know, you might even email us. I want to see kind of your Ms. Pac-Man, your Pac-Man. I want to see those pinouts and, like, maybe a picture of the edge, you know, the connectors on
right.
those.
If you're saying it looks different, remember that there are a ton of bootleg boards back in the day, especially on Ms. Pac-Man. I haven't seen too many bootleg super packs, but I've seen a lot of bootleg Ms. Pac-Man.
Right.
Sometimes they're not exactly the so you may not have one of them could be a bootleg board.
Mm-hmm. Because I've had a super pack. I've got a Ms. Pac-Man. I've got a Pac-Man. I've got a Pac-Man, a baby Pac-Man, a Pac-Man Junior, and short of the baby Pac-Man, all of them have the same wiring harness, the same pinout, the same power supply.
And that's what I was thinking, is that if we saw a picture of it, we might be able to distinguish it as a bootleg right off the bat. And I'm with Tim. We've seen tons of bootlegs. And it could just be that one of the, maybe your Ms. Pac-Man or your Pac-Man board is a bootleg. And, you know, so you might send some pictures of that. Let us take a look at it for you. So, okay, let's move on to Elijah's question. Elijah says, "Hey, guys, I recently acquired a Raiden 2 and a Caliber 50 cabinets. I had a few questions that I can't seem to find answers to. Number one, the Raiden 2 works 100% except for the monitor. The previous owner admitted to moving the cabinet on the trailer with the cabinet on its back. The display will show a warp screen that occupies about 2 inches of the screen and appears wavy. I am under the impression I need to replace the whole display. Do you have any tips? And number two, for the Caliber 50 cabinet, it has a Peter Chow switching power supply. Behind the Chow power supply is a large transformer about the size of a Magic 8-Ball box and a small doohickey that looks... doohickey, he has in quotes there. Doohickey.
That must be from Texas.
That's right. That looks like an old RF switches that came with the video game console systems. I've been exploring arcade sites for the last couple of days, and I don't understand what these items do. Nothing seems to mention these two items in any MAME Super Gun Classic Restoration guides or etc. So shouldn't it be as simple as wiring up a 12 and 5 volt line to a switching power supply and you're done? Does this big honking transformer have anything to do with the power supply as a whole? Is it used for part of the monitor power?" So let's take these questions one at a time first. Elijah's first question was about a Raiden 2 with the warping effect. Now, we already talked about this earlier when we answered somebody else's question, but, you know, pretty much every time this is a cap, and we'll just go ahead and kind of, I guess we'll leave it at that, you know, check some caps on your monitor. Is there anything, Stan or Tim, that you guys want to add to that before we move on?
Well, was it working before they transported it? Because he says they laid it on its back, which we recommend. It's not the end of the world. You would like to keep a game stand up, but it's not always practical. What happens then a lot of time is stuff gets shook loose. It can do that, getting moved standing up from one side of the game room to the other. So if it was working before, I doubt a cap went bad in the transport. So he needs to really check those connections and stuff, especially on his board, clean his harness, you know, and all those, like Stan talked about earlier, with a wire brush gently and all those type things. We use the pencil eraser and all that we've talked about before. You know, it could just be a connection issue.
Sure. Yeah, probably so on the connection issue, because when you move a game, you can lay it on your back, lay it on its back, just like you can lay a refrigerator on its back. You don't want to, because the old refrigerators had the coils in the back, and so we wouldn't do that, and you have to let the fluid. In an arcade game, you can lay it on its back. It's not ideal, but it's not going to kill the game. So there's a myth busted right there.
Yeah, there you go.
But I'm with Tim that anytime you move a game across your game room floor, you move it across your warehouse, those wire, those PCB connectors, the wire harness can work itself loose, and you got to go and you got to push all those wires back in and check all those harnesses, and a lot of times your problems will solve themselves.
Sure. And that, I think that's good advice. You know, besides checking caps, you know, just kind of, you know, check the harness, make sure that everything's connected up well, and, you know, go from there. So, okay, now let's get to his 50 cal questions. He's asking about the old, you know, the thing that looks like an old RF switch down the bottom of his game. Tim, what is the thing that looks like an old RF switch in the bottom of his game?
That would be an AC filter and probably the old power supply. What happens was when these power supplies begin to fail or they just weren't putting out the proper voltage, guys would go in and they would put in a new standard switching power supply like we see in a lot of games today. But instead of rewiring up the monitor and all that, or sometimes those would have like an isolation transformer on them, and they would just leave the monitor hooked up to that because the AC voltage was good and filtered through that AC filter going up there. And they would just run the board side to that. Very, very common. All that is your old power supply. If you want to and your monitor doesn't need an isolation transformer, you could bypass all that and take it out. But most of the time, it's just as easy for guys. They just leave it in there if it's not hurting anything. Most of the time, I see that in a lot of games today.
Yeah.
They've been converted.
Sure. Now, Stan, do you have anything to add, you know, about, you know, putting a switcher in this thing? You know, is there anything else that that you would recommend here for Elijah on his 50 cal cabinet?
Definitely such a new game like that, if you want to put a switching power supply, then go for it. That's going to give you a little bit more stability. You're not really after a classic look or feel, so, you know, go with something that's going to give you some years of trouble-free use.
Sure. That sounds good, yeah. And, you know, a lot of times, though, I know it's in those old games where that large transformer is, like one side will be for power supply and the other side will be for isolation transformer. I think you mentioned that, Tim.
Right. You may need it.
Yeah, you might need it to run. You know, you ask, is this part of monitor power? It could very well be part of your monitor
power. More than
power.
Likely it is.
So be careful with that. And
that's why they left it in there is to keep this monitor isolated and run. Power.
And don't forget that there are some other elements of the game that you're probably going to be running off there, too. It's not just the 12-volt and the 5-volt for the board, but you've got your marquee lights. You've got your coin door power that you're going to need. And so a lot of times they may pull off the 12 and the 5 and put a switcher in there, but you need power for all the other elements in there. Cooling fan.
Right. And, you know, we've talked about this before. If it's ugly and you hate it, one thing you can do is Bob Roberts sells a complete bottom to your game with the isolation, with the power supply, pre-built and everything for $90. And I think that includes shipping, or maybe $100 with shipping. So if you really want to pretty up a game and get rid of some of that ugly stuff, I'm telling you, I wouldn't build one of those things for $90. We're going to charge you more than that. So it's a good deal. His grandson makes them for him, and you can redo the whole bottom of a game like that and take out a lot of that stuff.
Sure, it sounds good, Tim. So, you know, if you want to just buy that whole bottom, you can from Bob Roberts. Or, you know, just be careful with when you're wiring up the switching power supply and everything, making sure that you take into account that monitor power might also be coming from that as well. So, okay, let's move on to Daryl's question. Now, Daryl's got a very interesting question. He says, "Hi, I did a stupid thing." He just comes out and says it. At least he leaves it all on the table.
Welcome to the team.
Yeah.
We've all
you
done
get a tattoo
things.
Now.
But he says, "I have an SME FDL5 10-tug monitor in my cabinet. I was connecting the speaker wires from the cabinet to the monitor, and I let a speaker wire fall. It draped along the metal shroud of the neck board, and now I get no picture.
Kaboom!
Kaboom, that's right. Also connected to the metal shroud are wires coming from the degaussing coils. When I hear a small squeal coming from the speaker amp area on the IR board, the power LEDs remain lit, but I cannot power it up. Normally, when I press the power button, I hear the dong from the degaussing at the startup, but now I get nothing. Where should I look first? By the way, this is an awesome website." Well, Daryl, thank you for the website compliment, and now we're going to move on to your questions here. So Tim, obviously, he had a kaboom issue, a stupid thing happened, but how does Daryl get his monitor back into working condition?
Well, we want to make sure that it's actually getting power up there. He could have took out his power supply.
Sure.
You know, that's generally what would pop on something like that. My feelings would be that would go before something on his chassis. But if his power supply is fine, if the game plays blind without his monitor hooked up, does everything work and you hear sounds, coins up, able to play, then if he blew anything on his monitor, well, there's usually a fuse. That's what the fuse is for, guys, so that when you do stupid things, it should pop the fuse and save your chassis. Now, if it landed in a certain area, it could have took out the hot. You know, then now we're talking about, well, a multitude of things it could be, but I would be more concerned with your power supply and those fuse first, and then maybe let's go from there.
Yeah, what about you, Stan? You have any recommendations for Daryl here?
Definitely the fuses, because some of the indications that you're talking about, that it's not, the light's not coming on, it's not doing like the, you're hearing the dong, and so most arcade games have at least three or four fuses in them scattered around, a couple down in the on the power supply, on the monitor. There are several fuses, so check your fuses. Check if you don't have a meter to check to see if you have voltage coming up to where it needs to be. Well, then just check to see if it's playing blind, like Tim said. Do you have any sounds? So definitely probably the fuses, and that's what they're designed for. I don't know if you really blew up the monitor from a speaker wire. You probably took out some fuses or some transistors, but so I would start there.
Yeah, if nothing else, know that we're going to highly recommend, guys, when we're making anywhere in your game, game power should be off.
Yes, yes.
Okay,
that's
so
great recommendation.
Nothing else, you know, we're going to pat you on the back for helping other people learn not to do that.
That's right.
And that's generally what my approach has been. I can't always tell you what to do, but most of the time I can tell you what not to do.
That's right. Yeah, don't let your speaker wires drape over your monitor neck, I think is a good not to do.
And even when the power is still off, you've got to be careful, because those capacitors do just that. They hold a charge. And so if you cross the bottom of a capacitor with your finger, it's going to give you a little zap. Now, it's not going to be enough to really hurt you, but it's not going to feel good. So, and same thing with the high-output transistors. They're going to have a little bit of juice, too, and especially if they're bleeding. So even with the power off, you got to be careful.
Sure. So, and that's a great point, Stan. Always be careful around arcade cabinets, regardless of if they're plugged in or not. You know, be respectful of them at all times. So, okay, let's Daryl, hopefully that helps you out with your question. Hopefully you can get that everything working up. So let's go in to Chris's question. He says, hi, I recently bought a Q-Bert arcade. It works perfectly with one minor exception, the knocker. The pinball style knocker that makes the sound when Q-Bert falls off the playing field doesn't work. Previous owner never knew about it because it really doesn't affect gameplay. The knocker actually looks new and appears simple. Two wires going to it, coil looks good, no burn marks. One wire has an inline fuse that was good. Any chance you could take a look at it or repair it? I'm in Plano, Texas. So he's not very far from us in Plano there. I'm afraid to get very far into it for fear of breaking something else. Like I said, it plays great. If interested, I can give you a link to some forums and discuss it. Looking forward to hearing back from you. Thanks. So I'm actually going to throw this one to Stan first. And this is a question from Chris. And I know you have a Q-Bert, Stan, here in the game room. So what that knocker, what controls it, and what is really the, you know, what can he check to see if it's working or not?
You know, you're right, got a Q-Bert, and what a great game. It is hard to keep running. The Q-Bert is run from the PCB. What happens is you fall off the screen, and it sends an electrical signal to a flipper coil, and it knocks on a piece of wood on the back of the coin box, and you hear that classic knock. And there's a resistor between that reduces the power between the two power leads for the circuit. That resistor will go out, and if that resistor goes out and it's not putting out, if it's not operating within tolerance, you're not going to get the knock. But one thing you want to check on that Q-Bert, you probably notice, is it's got a ton of wire connectors, lots of old style Gottlieb wire harnesses, and that wiring harness will get corroded, and the voltage won't make it through, and it won't knock your knocker. So check that resistor between the two. Make sure that the PCB wiring harness up to that board is in place.
And that sounds like that could definitely be it here, Stan. Sounds like that resistor's probably giving some issues. Tim, you got anything to throw in here?
Who makes Q-Bert?
Gottlieb.
Gottlieb, right. How many arcade games did Gottlieb make?
Two.
Yeah.
Okay.
Only one really popular one.
Right. So here's my point, you know, is that it really is treated like a pinball machine, that it could be very much a resistor. But you can just, you know, if you don't feel comfortable doing that, you can get a whole new coil for about $10. The coil on it has the numbers and stuff that what it is. We can help you find that part if you can't find it. But most Gottlieb type parts you're going to have to get. You can go to pinballresource.com, and they should have that coil. If you don't feel comfortable soldering that resistor, you can just replace the whole coil.
Yeah.
And but that definitely sounds like what it could be. There also is a logic chip that tells it, hey, it's time to kick, which could be, but more than likely, I'm going to bet it's the coil resistor or the wiring going to it. Pretty common.
Sure. It sounds like it in this case, too. So hopefully Chris can check that out himself. If he doesn't feel comfortable, we know a lot of people in the Dallas area that'd be, I'm sure, more than happy to check it out for you. But we'll email you this information, and if you still don't feel comfortable with it, we'll get you in touch
with
somebody.
Yeah, Chris, you did ask about us repairing it. That's about a two and a half to Plano,
yeah,
probably. About 2.5 hour drive. Not that we wouldn't come do it, but it probably has to be some Dave and Buster's involved or something.
Yeah, free trip.
If we did, and it might be, we do know some guys in that area, though. If you'll email me, we can highly recommend, you can look at hyperspacearcade.com, and you can look at Scott's website. Scott's in your area, not very far from you. I know he's in Denton, so, he could probably help you out with that.
Sure, or somebody else, we can definitely get him in touch with somebody.
Yeah, most pinball guys can do that one.
The one thing about your Q-Bert, and just get used to it, it's a great classic to own, but because it's wired like a pinball machine and built like a video game, it is like a European car. You're going to have to work on it on the weekends to keep it running. I got my knocker working before, and then, 2 weeks later, it stopped working again, and it was nothing except just the wiring harness.
Yeah. So there you go. Be careful.
Frankenstein comes to mind.
Frankenstein.
No, everybody loves Q-Bert.
That's great right. Game.
Great game. It is a great game. So hopefully, Chris, they answered your question. And like we said, if we have to get you in touch with somebody in your area, we definitely will. So,
Dave and Buster's. We'll come. We'll come for Dave and Buster's.
That's right. So, okay, let's move on to David. And David says, hi, I'm running a Neo Geo one slot through a cabinet, and it works perfectly, except for sometimes, often when the game resets in a track mode, the picture goes off. When this happens, the sound and game still run fine, but it only comes back again when I unplug the whole cabinet and plug it back in. Do you think this is a power issue? The cutoff also happens when switching between the main game and the continue screen, or during the intro of Last Blade, which is a bit visually complex. The MVS and cartridges all work perfectly, as I've had them in another cabinet running for hours at a time. Any help on this would be great. Thanks. So David's having some problems with his Neo Geo 1 slide, and it sounds like it just wants to reset or shut off whenever he's in the middle of playing. And he asked us, is this a power issue? Tim, does this sound like a power issue?
It sounds exactly like a power issue. And we always tell guys, anytime you have a game that is resetting, that there's something in, why does a game reset? Well, it's temporary loss of power, not enough power. And we're talking very, very small amounts, right, that it has to fluctuate. So you definitely need to find out on your power if your 5 volts and your 12 is in range. And a very tight range there, guys. If you can adjust it, fine. If you can't, you might need to try a new power supply. But one thing we've always talked about, we're talking about a jam a game, right, guys? So it's always good to have that extra Street Fighter board or something around to plug in to see if it is. But I bet any board, and some boards are a little bit more particular. We always talk about 5. I know a lot of games that run 5.1.
Sure.
You might just tweak that a little bit up, a little bit down. Play with that, but it definitely, on the Neo Geo, I can know for sure that it definitely likes that 5 volts. Pretty picky about that, isn't it, John?
Sure, and in my experience, it has been. Now, Stan, do you have anything else to throw in here for David as far as getting his Neo Geo working?
Yeah, I sure do. If you can use a multimeter and you can test that, make sure that you're not getting a false positive, because Tim mentioned that it can fluctuate. Well, it's going to fluctuate under a load. And so you go back there with your meter and you check it and you're like, okay, it's got 5. But you only hold it there for a moment. You're playing your game for 5 minutes. It's putting that power supply under a load and it starts fluctuating and boom, it resets. So be sure to keep in mind that the load factor can cause that circuit to fail in the power supply or fluctuate to enough where it resets.
Sure. And that's a good point, Stan. A lot of times we recommend the guys check the power at the harness for that reason, because we know that can happen. So,
and then you do have crystals and stuff on your board that could cause that. But they just, it's not real common. We want to make sure we get in the right voltage first and go from there.
Sure. It sounds good. Okay, so hopefully, you know, that answers David's question. And now let's move on to Mark's question. And Mark has a question and he says, now this is Mark Nellis, the guy who's he's emailed us several times. And he was the one from Guantanamo, if you guys remember. I believe he's back in San Antonio now. So yep. It's glad to have you back here in Texas.
Shout out to Mark, member of the Timmy P. Mafia crew, I might say. Mafia Wars,
that's right. So Tim's a big Mafia Wars fan. But let's go ahead and answer Mark's question here. And he says, hi, Tim and Jonathan. I've been thinking of getting a few boards off eBay to swap out in my JAMA Plus Street Fighter II Turbo cabinet. Will a CPS II board with both the A and B boards plug and play into a JAMA Plus cabinet? Now, Mark, I mean, I'm just going to tell you from personal experience, I believe that the JAMA is all the same on them. But the actual kick harness, or the plus, if you will, of that is different between the Street Fighter II Turbo and the CPS II boards. Now, Tim, what do you think? Is that, in your experience, is that the same?
Yeah, John, you know that area better than I do, but I remember that, yeah, one plugs in like on the top, one is like on the side, but he can get an adapter.
Right.
I'm pretty sure Bob Roberts still sells that adapter.
Yeah,
which,
you get the CPS II kick harness, I believe.
Yeah, kick harness. And so, but if you just want to do some testing, you can get the video and sound and all that up. You just won't have all your controls.
Right, and it's kind of frustrating when you're trying to kick and you can't kick. I believe the kick buttons are actually on that kick harness for the CPS2 games. So, yes, you can definitely put that in there, but you will need a kick harness for that. Stan, do you have anything else to add to that? Or
Mark, I wanted to know how the arcade market was in San Antonio. They say you're buying up some stuff. Why don't you email them and let them know my folks are from there and may need to come down and pick up some classics.
Yeah, you might need to go down there and, hey, how's it going, family? And pick up a couple arcade games while you're down there.
I might throw in We Will Work for SeaWorld tickets and trips to the Riverwalk.
Man, he just wants everything free today, doesn't he? Free Dave & Buster's, free Riverwalk, man.
Well, it ain't free. I'm going to supply a service here.
That's right.
Sometimes that's cheaper than cash.
That's right.
There's a word that comes to mind. Knowledge is power.
Our knowledge is free stuff in Tim's case. So, yeah, sure. I mean, yeah, hey, Tim will
take,
do it.
You know, besides PayPal, cash, credit cards, we're expanding SeaWorld tickets and trips to Dave & Buster's.
That's right. So we'll take those as well. So that's pretty good. So, Mark, hopefully that helps you out a bit. And just keep us posted, if you end up buying some and wearing up that kick harness, how it went for you. So,
Mark's been on a buying spree, too, Mark. We need some pictures of all this. Every time I talk to him, he's picking up new games and stuff.
That's
kind
right.
of exciting.
He's got the sickness.
Yeah, he's down with the sickness. All
yeah,
right.
They don't make any medicine, my friend.
That's right. The addiction, if you will.
Yeah.
So, I think as we've mentioned before. So, yeah, once you get it, it's hard to stop. It's like potato chips,
Yeah.
So, Mark, yeah, let us know, if you got some new stuff. Send us some pictures our way. We'll take a look at it. So let's go ahead and move on to our YouTube questions now. And we got one from A Supermat. And A Supermat says, I'm having issues with the Mortal Kombat 2 version 3.1. I checked out the basics, including the power supply and reseeing the chips on the board, but I'm still having issues. When I turn the game on, only half the O is present in the word checking ROMs, and the fight mode names can barely be made out. I usually only see half of the fight timer, and on certain levels, the entire upper section of the screen is choppy. Also, the versus screens with the characters are very choppy as well. What should I do? So, Tim, it looks like he's having some sprite issues with his Mortal Kombat 2, and, it's just not displaying correctly. I mean, do you think this is a problem, maybe power supply, or do you think it's a problem with the board, or what?
Well, he said he checked those things, and I'm assuming that, they're fine. It really sounds like he's having some board issues with that game. And, again, that's one of those games when we could look at it, or some things that we could probably do, maybe some guys that do some mega board repairs all the time, it's going to boil down to probably finding another board is cheaper than repairing that one. 8 out of 10 times, I'm going to say. If he's had that many issues, his best bet's probably go on eBay and get another board. But one thing that, that's why we're going to reiterate this, that it's good to have that working crappy JAMA board around, or an 8-liner board or something that you buy off eBay for $10, because then you can at least say, hey, it's not the monitor, it's not my power, this board works fine, this board's not working, it must be my board set.
Right, and that's always a good thing to have around, that extra JAMA board that you can plug in just to check if it's your power. Stan, do you have anything else to add to A Supermat's question?
Yeah, as a matter of fact, A Supermat, if you have another JAMA game around, troubleshoot that board, pop it out and pop it into another game. It's JAMA, it'll work just fine. The controls may not, but you'll be able to see if you can duplicate those problems, if it's in the harness or the power supply and not the board. If it's in the board, it'll go over to the new cabinet, and you know it's in the board. That thing has 16 ROMs, I believe, mm-hmm. and so that's a lot of gates, electronic gates that open and close, a lot of hexadecimal code that could get fried over the years. And so you may have cleaned the legs and done what we would do here is the same, but without if there that ROM is malfunctioning inside, you may be, time to replace it.
Sure, and that's a good point. You know, if you haven't heard JAMA game around, definitely try it in another game. If you're still having the problems with the graphics and everything, then for a fact it'll be your board. So, hey, Super Matt, hopefully that gives you some ideas of things to try. And we'll go ahead and move on to BigUn89. And he writes, my vertical size isn't getting large enough to fill the screen after I've replaced the tube. The vertical coil was cut off by 3.3 ohms in resistance. How do I get the vertical screen size to get bigger than what the potentiometer is allowing? So, Tim, he wants to make his vertical size bigger, but his potentiometer won't let him go any further. What do you think the problem is here?
Well, if it's a 5K potentiometer, he's got a bad potentiometer. Obviously, it's only reading 3. You know, other than that, there's not a lot that I know that you can do. We usually have the opposite problem where the screen's too big.
Right. Now, could it be possible that he's mixing up his vertical and horizontal and maybe it's a width coil issue?
It's very possible. That would be my next phase would be you could have, like I said, sometimes what we're calling vertical and horizontal, it's confusing to people. But you can replace that. Bob Roberts sells a horizontal width coil and a cap kit for that. Those are those caps, guys, that we talk about look like big chiclets, for better lack of knowledge. They're kind of, rectangular shape, usually orange or green. A lot of those will affect that size like that. You can physically inspect them. Yeah, another great thing I would tell him to go to tvrepaironline.com and definitely ask Michael about that one and see what Michael says. He couldn't join us today, but, I would definitely see what he says. But if you got a 5K pot only reading 3.3, that's no brainer. It's not putting out enough power. It's just, it's kind of like saying it goes up to volume 5, but I'm only reaching 3.3. Why is it not loud enough?
Right.
Well, there you go. That's according to the information he gave us. Which is, it sounds like he kind of knows what he's doing. He's able to read the pot and see that it's not putting out that much resistance. And if it indeed is a 5K pot, one thing we talked about simple he can do is all those pots are the same. He can just switch it with one that is kind of working without messing up that one too bad, or somewhere you wouldn't need the full range of the pot like that and swap it over there, just see if that's what it was.
Sure, and that's a good idea too, Tim. Now, Stan, do you have anything else to add to Tim's comments?
Yeah, that it may or may not be the resistor. Is what's feeding the resistor? If it's a 5K potentiometer, what's coming to that resistor or that potentiometer? So what about what's in front of it? Could it be your screen is not getting large enough? And I agree that it could be tomato or tomato, but was it horizontal or is it vertical? We look at the TV screens today, 30 years ago, we'd say that TV was on its side. And it's just different today. And so it's just about preference. But what's feeding that? And are you getting enough power to be able to fill that screen? Or is it something's collapsing like a capacitor?
Sure. And that could very well be. So, check around those pots, maybe replace that potentiometer. And, and maybe look at the little chiclet, the width coil, and around that area to see if you can replace some of those caps.
It could be a filter cap.
Yeah.
That's why it's so easy to say, guys. We always say, we'll do a cap kit first. But you know what? If you're going to keep the game or keep the monitor, why not? Then you can at least rule out that it's not a cap. It's good practice. It's not hard, and it's something that the average guy can do if he, take a little time, watch a video on it, and do that cap kit, then you can at least eliminate the caps.
Sure, and that's a great point. So hopefully, BigUn89, that answers your question. And now let's move on to RichardH754, and he asks, is there a focus adjuster on a Tatung monitor? Now, we were talking about this a little bit before the podcast, and guys, have we ever seen a monitor without that focus adjustment? Stan, have you ever seen one without it?
No.
Yeah, so we've never seen one without the focus adjustment, and I think in our video about adjusting an arcade monitor, we actually go over that a little bit. Tim, can you describe maybe where you find that focus adjustment typically?
Well, it's generally typically on your flyback. You can follow that anode wire, that suction cup looking thing on top of your monitor, follow it down. It'll go into like a little block, a black box area, gray, and on the sides of it is generally your focus and your brightness. Now, I'll be honest, I get them all confused. I've seen the focus on the top, focus on the bottom. Sometimes they have three knobs, but usually it'll say on there focus, or just turn them. Have somebody help you and say, is this getting blurry or is it getting clear? I'm really stretching my brain here, and maybe somebody else can email us and say, oh, there's plenty of monitors out there. Maybe somebody like Michael or somebody. I just don't remember seeing a TV monitor. Maybe one of the newer style that you have to go into a menu, you know, but right. They're still focused. I've never seen one that didn't. You know, if it has that digital, if it's a digital monitor, you might have to go into a menu system and do it. I'm not that familiar with this monitor enough to tell him, send me a picture. And I might can point you right in the right direction if you can give me a picture of that chassis.
That sounds good. You know, definitely, you know, maybe send us over a picture there, and we'll take a look at it for you, Richard, and, you know, we'll go from there on it. So, okay, I've got one more. Now, this is less of a question, but I did want to bring it up, especially since it's kind of, you know, it's kind of a positive thing. So, but this is from Ro Asaka 1, I guess is how you pronounce that, and he says, I have to say, you guys do a really great service to the arcade cabinet owning community. I've never seen such detailed explanations and videos anywhere else. I've done my own research on a few other sites, but nothing has taught me as much or given me as much confidence to do the work myself as your videos. And you even answer user questions directly in your podcast. I think I speak for a lot of people when I say we really appreciate it. And, you know, Roy Asaka, one, we really appreciate everybody, you know, and all of the great compliments we get from the community. It's just such an honor for us to be able to, you know, give this information out to you guys so you guys can fix games. Because our whole point behind the website and the whole thing is to drive arcade. We want people to become arcade collectors because that's what we, you know, that's what we enjoy. This is a hobby that all three of us sitting at this table tonight, we all love this hobby. And we feel like the more people that are involved with it, the better the hobby is. So we love, you know, and getting to know fixing games, I mean, that's part of the hobby, you know. And that's why we have all this information available to you, is so that we might kind of spread this our gospel, if you will, of arcade repair and how to fix your games so that you guys can, you know, kind of pass this down and keep these games alive, right?
Yeah, yes. And, you know, we laugh about this, but I really mean this in a serious way. I've always said, if I can do this, anybody can do this. I'm not an electronics genius or anything. You know, I just had a love for the games, and I fortunately have a couple of really good friends that are very, very knowledgeable. We've all pulled each other's knowledge, you know, and sometimes it's a network of people. And that's why we do this, is because, well, I might not have the answer. Somebody out there might hear this, and they might, and we will encourage people to write in. If I'm wrong, hey, you know, I'll be the first to admit it. That's okay, you know, because you don't do any, just doing nothing, it doesn't get you anywhere. But by asking questions, by participating, by sharing your knowledge, we can all get these games back up and going. So, like I said, if I can do it, anybody can do this. It's really not rocket science. It just takes a little effort, and they make a few mistakes along the way, get shocked a few times, a few more gray hairs maybe than I had a few years ago. But, you know, overall, we have a lot of fun, and that's what it's all about, and playing these games and, you know, keeping the kids off the streets, whatever we got to do, you know.
Sure. Now, Stan, do you have anything to add as far as, you know, your community involvement and how the arcade community has kind of accepted you and, like, how you got into the hobby and all that kind of stuff before we sign off here?
Yeah, you know, I would just want to agree with Tim that we pool our knowledge together. When you have arcade buddies, arcade friends, or, you know, arcade group in your area, and you guys connect,
arcade brothers.
That's right. We you know, I've often joked about starting the Church of the Living Arcade around here, but when you have arcade brothers, what you end up doing is not only pooling your knowledge, but you end up pooling parts, because you may not have the right capacitor or the right resistor or the right monitor chassis for that thing that just blew out. But you know what? Your friend might, and he may have something that's just sitting around scrap, because we all just collect old parts and just kind of hang on to them. And then we're like, hey, do you have a Hanatrax, la 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 la, or Wells Garner, la la la? And we might, oh yeah, I got one of those. And you get your games up and running, and you share knowledge and you share parts, and then your game lives.
Yeah, and that's the whole point behind the website, is to help games live. A working game is a non-playing game, and that's no fun. We want games to be working. You know, we want you to be able to play them. That's why our slogan is, you know, you fix the game, you play the game, because that's what we're all about. You know, the games, you know, you can't play the game unless it's working, and that's our whole goal, is to get your games working. So, I'll go ahead and give you the contact information before we sign off here. Of course, you can always email all the questions to questions@arcaderepairtips.com. And you can also leave a message on our voicemail line. And that's 972-8-AR-TIPS. That's 972-827-8477 for those of you who can't see the numbers on your little phone there. And then we also have a Twitter account. You can send a Twitter to us at twitter.com/arcaderepair. And we have a Facebook page that I always forget the URL to, but one of these days I'll get it right. So, but for right now, just check it out on the site. There's a little how to get in touch with us section, and you can look under there for our Facebook site. Tim, Stan, do you guys have anything before we sign off?
No, just thank you guys for your help. And Stan, thanks for letting us use your game room today. It's always cool to have all these background sounds and everything and talk games with you.
Yeah, you're welcome, and I think I'm going to go play Star Wars or maybe Donkey Kong or who knows, Tron maybe around the corner.
That's right. We really want to thank Stan for allowing us the use of his game room and his time to come and talk about arcade game repairs with us, and it was really a pleasure having you here. We'll have to have you back on, Stan, for sure.
Well, thank you. And don't forget, if you can rejuvenate your tube and save it, rejuvenate it.
There you go. So that's Stan's last final comment. So we'll go ahead and sign off.
Kind of like Bob Barker and Spade Animals.
That's right. That's Stan's Bob Barker line. He's going to say that.
Rejuvenate your tube.
That's right. That's his campaign. Rejuvenate your tubes, people. So, but we're going to go ahead and sign off. We thank everybody for listening, and you know, I guess we'll see you on episode 12. But and remember, here at Arcade Repair Tips, when you fix the game, you play the game. Take care, everybody.